Just after 4 o'clock, Edmonton sports leader, TSN 1260. Happy Thursday to you. Of course, Oilers practicing today. They'll practice again tomorrow, and then they have a 1 o'clock start on home ice against Arizona. Coyotes, the Coyotes, of course, in Vancouver tonight, and I think all Oilers fans are hoping for is not a three-point game. You hope that one of those two teams wins in regulation time, as every point matters now down the stretch in the ultra-tight Pacific Division. And then after Saturday, the Oilers will be off for, 11 days? We got a bye week, then the All-Star game, then they'll have some practices on the 27th and 28th of December and back at it against the Flames on Wednesday the 29th, which might be one of the most anticipated Oilers-Flames games, arguably since 1991 when they met in the playoffs. Honestly, I think you go that far. Well, maybe the 92 season, they were still competitive then. But after that, it's been rare that both teams were competitive at the same time. And there hasn't been the animosity fresh off of the Cassian Kachuk situation, which I'm not sure it's necessarily going to boil over into fisticuffs. It would be great, but usually that doesn't happen in today's game. But if anything, it'll be a rocking atmosphere, to say the least. So big game both for the Oilers. First place potentially on the line in the Pacific Division. Depending on what happens. And the Oilers, at the bare minimum, will just want to keep pace with the Coyotes. Let's talk hockey. Next guest joins us in studio with Gregor and Strudwick. He was a draft pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs, played for the St. John's Maple Leafs for 5 seasons, then moved up to the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Chicago, actually, no, 6 seasons, 7 seasons, actually, then was up full-time with the Maple Leafs, the Blackhawks, the Los Angeles Kings, and the Boston Bruins, the pride of Spruce Grove, Alberta, and the gentleman who knocked Strutty's teeth out, Nathan Dempsey, joins us. Demmer, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me.
How many days, months, or weeks did it take Strutty to get over you knocking his teeth out? Or did he just thank you?
No, it didn't happen that well. But you know what? Strutty's a pretty forgiving guy. And to be completely honest, the whole story, I mean, the feeling that I had in the pit of my stomach when that happened was something I don't wish on anybody. It was something, like, Jason and I were good friends when we were in Chicago. And this is a time where I generally felt awful about it. You know, you don't mean to do it. I didn't mean to. I mean, I'm not that accurate of a shooter in the first place.
Was it? Now, did it go off a stick or did it go straight in the face?
Yeah, off his stick.
No. This is where we need to just clarify something.
Okay,
here.
So there's different versions of the story.
Yeah, the thing about it is that he believes that I shot it right in his teeth. Mm-hmm. There's not a chance. If it was going directly in his teeth, that thing would have been out of the building. Like, you know, I can't shoot it that high, and I can't shoot that accurate either. So it went off. We were doing a PK-PP drill.
Yes.
Jason was doing his PK specialty, and I was fortunate enough to be in the power play. The story goes is that right before that, Brian Sutter, who's our coach, tore a strip off me. Saying that you got to shoot the puck, you're shooting it like a so-and-so, and you're not shooting the puck, you got to shoot the puck. So I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to shoot the puck. So not only that, but like I think Jason and I have discussed before, we had a rookie party the night before.
Yeah.
So not feeling 100% the next morning at all.
No.
And we're in the old, not even practicing at the Saddle Dome in Calgary, it was that old corral.
Corral Center across the street, yeah.
So it's a little dark in there,
oh,
maybe.
Oh, dark, well, and just cold and dreary, and I mean, just a horrible place to practice. And with Brian Sutter's voice beaconing me in the back of my mind to shoot the puck, well, I was just teeing off on this thing, and Strutty, and we all know, like, if you want to earn your time in the league and in the lineup, you got to do your job, whether it's being the power player or the PK. Yeah. And I'm sure that I got that thing deflected off a stick and hit you in the teeth. I'm sure of it.
I don't know. I just remember you looking me in the eye before he shot that. You're like, oh, I'm going to put this upstairs.
Buddy, my head was never up. How would I be looking at you in the eye?
No, you know what? I remember really well. In some ways, you let me off the hook. I was really hungover that morning. And I remember the night before.
We need to get off of practice.
Yeah, I was like, I'll do anything to get out of this. And I remember the night before, we were all sitting around. This our rookie party. If you're not familiar with that, it's where all the rookies gather to take the team out for dinner. And it's like dinner and drinks, and it's excessive. And the coach knows it's coming, so whatever, you have your time off. But I don't know if you remember this, but I was chirping people about their lips and how people had problems. And I remember Igor Korolev.
You were chirping somebody? I can't even imagine.
Yeah, that's really all I did. And I was making fun of a lot of people that night and their lips. So the next one, when I get in the lips, I think a lot of guys were like cheering. They were cheering behind because they're like, Stradwick got his. I hated that guy anyways, you know? And, but it was a lot of fun. It was, we had a fun team there, but, it happens, man. You get hit in the face every now and then in practice, the morning after rookie
party. Your teammate.
No,
dude.
It's not ideal. It's
and
not,
here's the thing, so he goes and, I mean, he leaves the ice, obviously.
Yeah.
And,
did you pick up his teeth off the ice for him?
No, mm-hmm. None of the teeth fell out.
What?
No, they all stayed in my mouth.
See, I don't shoot that hard, Griggs.
Oh, okay.
No. But
geez, Stretty, man, that sounds like it's not that bad of a story then.
Well, they're just pushed back. And you know what?
Oh.
Honestly, at the moment, even though I recognized I was in a lot of pain, I was just proud that Denver was able to raise the puck. I was so proud of him. Like, you got it up, big guy.
It was a big day.
So did Brian Sutter come over and say, now that's what I mean. Yeah, that's how you shoot the puck.
He probably would have. He probably would have given Stretty, attaboy, to get in the shooting lane, Stretty.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are leaving on a plane right after that skate, and there's no Stretty. Like, so we're going, because I think we're going down south. I think we're
San Jose.
California. Yeah. I think we're going to California. And so we're sitting on the plane, and there's no Stretty on the plane. And he actually had to stay back in Calgary to get his work done as we go to California. And I just was like,
it was awful. You know, and the worst part is like he didn't even think about, okay, we're out of here. We're getting on the plane. We'll see you later. Like the party goes on. And I'm just left behind in Calgary. So much for never leaving a man behind. Well, I guess we didn't believe in that. Yeah. You guys couldn't get out of Calgary fast enough.
Yeah.
So you guys were teammates there for two seasons. Then you got traded in near the end at the trade deadline of the second year from the Blackhawks to the Los Angeles Kings. And, you know, you had Luke Robitaille, I think, Ziggy Palfy, if I'm not mistaken, was on that team.
He was.
Now, you'd been, was that your first time traded during the season?
That's my first time traded ever. I've only been traded one time, and that was the only time.
Oh, because you signed as a free agent.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So I spent some time in Toronto and St. John's, like you mentioned before, Greg's, and signed in Chicago as a free agent. And then, just before the trade deadline after my two-year deal in Chicago, I got traded to L.A., and what a weird feeling that is.
So can you tell us how it went? Were you expecting to get traded
number one? No.
No?
I was having a really good year.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I was waiting for a phone call for an extension or something or a new deal because I was having a really good year. I was playing lots. The funny story is I was giving my kid a bath, and I got a phone call at home from the GM in Chicago, said that you're being dealt. And that was it. I was gone the next morning. So that was at like 8 o'clock at night. I drove down to United Center, grabbed my stuff, wrote a note on the whiteboard to the boys, said, thanks and we'll see you guys. And then I actually played in LA the next day.
So you're in was Bob Pulford the GM then?
Pulley, what? Yeah, wasn't he? No, you
he
know
was
who
president.
It was.
It was Smith.
Oh, okay, Smith. Mike. So, is the conversation, hi, Nathan, it's Mike Smith. I just want to let you know you've been traded. Thanks for your service. Somebody from the Kings will call you. Goodbye.
That's exactly what it was. Exactly.
But he mumbled the whole time. Pardon me? Like, he was a mumbler.
He was a mumbler and not the most personable individual in the first place.
Yeah. In his office, and joined by Nathan Dempsey talking about his career, in his office, I don't know if you ever remember, he had a full-size canoe. In his office. I went into his office and you're in meeting. I'm like, why is there a canoe? And his desk, it was like, do you remember this? It was like a small desk and it was pushed against the wall, but it was small. So he sat on one side and I faced the wall and with a canoe like 3 feet away from me.
Just a really interesting dude.
Yeah, really neat guy, but a non-hockey guy is what I'd say.
What was his answer is why the canoe is there?
I didn't ask him. We should ask him because I just remember there was a canoe in there. Like, can you imagine? What are you doing? I'm bringing a canoe into my, what does that mean? I'm bringing a canoe to my office. You think I mumble? This guy makes me sound like, the clearest speaking human on the planet.
Somebody that does mumble.
Yeah. Now, Denver, I've always wanted to ask you this question. And you played a long time in the minors.
Yeah.
And I remember we skated together a lot in the summers.
Yeah,
and I'd always come back and be like, why is this guy not playing in the NHL? Like, you had, you're a good skater, smart player, lots of skill. But was there a time over those 5 or 6 seasons that you were on the other side of the planet, basically playing in the AHL in St. John's? Did you ever doubt yourself that you weren't an NHL player?
Oh, God. All the time. Like, there's so many times, Jay, when you're playing in the minors and you're really lighting it up and then they call a gap and it's not you.
Yeah.
and you call another guy up and it's not you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the first call up I got, actually, no, it'd be the second call up I got. I played really well. I played 25 games, was playing lots, playing regular. Pat Quinn was the coach, and Pat really just didn't like me because I think Pat really liked his big, strong, stay at home
sure.
guys.
Yeah.
He sent me down, and Gary Roberts and Dave Manson actually went into the office after he sent me down, and kind of, you can't send this guy down. You cannot send this guy down. What are you doing? He's making our team better, blah, blah, blah. But Pat really just, he just didn't think I could play. He just, he liked his big, strong guys. He, yeah. he had a certain, there's something about me that he just didn't like, and that was kind of final. And so that's when I knew I needed a new change. I needed a change of scenery.
Because you were in that organization for 8 years.
It was a long time. Yeah. Dude.
Did you?
And I'm on the rock for 8 years, so that's like 16 years for the regular person.
And at any point, did you or your agent ask for a trade?
Yep. And they said no. They loved having me because I was team captain when I was 22. So I was actually captain of that hockey team for the last 5 years that I was there.
Wow.
And I was a guy that they could call up for an injury, but they really liked me. Down they said that we love having you work with our young guys. I was 20 friggin' 3 years old. Yeah. And I'm here to work with you. I'm a young guy.
Yeah. And so they say they don't want to trade you. And I know this is late 90s, early 2000s. Was there ever, you know, the internet was just coming around at that point. Was there ever thought to say, you know what, I'm just not going to show up at camp and see if I can get traded? It just wasn't really an option, was it?
Wasn't me either, Greg.
Yeah.
I mean, to a fault, I think I was maybe just too loyal. Like, I just, he gave me my chance and here I am. Yeah. And you just start playing and then you get, the thing is you get comfortable. My son was born there, and then I'm like, well, maybe this is just who I am. And yeah. That's when, I mean, luckily for me, I got out when I did. I got to Chicago. I realized, every time I got called up to Toronto, I knew I could play. But it starts getting in your head that maybe this is just who I am.
It's interesting you say that Nathan Dempsey joins us, because Stretti said that last week. He felt like, you know what, I think maybe I was too accommodating at times in my career that you didn't, it's a hockey thing. Like, oh, I'm a good guy. You know what? I want to be a team player, and that's a hard balance to want to sometimes stand up for yourself because people think, well, that means you're not a team player. I don't think it means you're not a team player, but it's really hard to do.
Oh, and he hit the nail on the head because that's exactly how I felt. I felt as though this is a game we love to play. And I'm just not more than anything. I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to be making a living playing a game. And then you start to forget that you're good enough. You can play at that level and give yourself a chance and stick up for yourself a little bit more. And, you look back on it and people ask me, is there any regrets? There's a couple, right? Like, I wish I just would have stuck up for myself a little earlier, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. I were joined by Nathan Dempsey, longtime professional and NHL player. Towards the end of that year, before he got traded out of Chicago, Scott Nickel, who's now assistant GM, runs the Milwaukee or the National Minor League team there as a GM. Then you and I, we hung out a lot together, the three of us, and we kind of had similar careers, you know, journeyman, whatever you want to call us. And the three of us are in the back of this car and driving around. I don't even remember what city we're in, but we were talking about what would happen the next year. Now, we knew the lockup, but after that. And I remember you, I don't remember if it was you or Scotty, but one of you said, you know what, I really need to play well because I want the Blackhawks to sign me. And I'd already gone through this free agency thing. And I said to you guys, like, guys, you're not just playing for the Blackhawks. There's 29 other teams that you're going to play for. And I remember you guys kind of looked over and it was, I'm not going to say I was like a genius, but you know, I think sometimes we forget that we're so stuck on the one team that other teams are always watching. They're always trying to upgrade us. That's why when you did get traded to LA, we missed you, but we were happy for you because we know you go somewhere, you maybe get more opportunity than you were going to get with that. I mean, that Blackhawk team wasn't very good, but the three of us were good. The rest of the team didn't play
well. I think when I got traded, Struts, that was the first time that it wasn't because they didn't want me.
Right,
somebody else did want me.
100%.
And that really felt good to me. And that's something that I don't think I had my whole pro career. Like somebody that was like, we're going to give up. And it wasn't, I think it was a third rounder or something.
Yeah.
We're going to give this up because we want them. They were making a playoff push that year. We missed the playoffs by a couple points.
Yeah.
But they thought it was a guy that could come in and I could help make this playoff push. And
Well, you had 4 goals and 7 points as a D-man in 17 games with the Kings.
Yeah, I mean, like, there you go. I had a good opportunity. I played on the power play. I mean, you named a couple of the guys. We had a pretty solid team. After that season, we had the lockout. I went over and played in Germany during the lockout.
Mm-hmm.
Came back. And it's funny because at that point, when I went over to Germany and came back, I think the lockout couldn't happen in a worse year for me because I was just coming off a great year where I played really well. The lockout, we lose that year. And honestly, I think some of the positive part I had of my memory about that playing just crept. That didn't keep in my head. And I came back to myself wondering if I was good enough to play. And when I went back to LA, I signed a new contract in LA. It was a good contract. And I just didn't have the same swagger as I needed to have.
Nathan Dempsey joins. We'll get to that. And we're also going to, of course, you're working with Vimy and Don Hockey Academies right now, working with a lot of young players, because I want to get into the mental side of it and how, you know, there's so much emphasis on the physical side of the game, which is hugely important. If you can't skate, it's really hard to play right now. There's no question about it. But the mental side and learning how to sometimes have to fight off your own inner voice to say, hey, zip it. No, I'm good. Because there isn't a lot of always somebody there patting you on the back. You got to be pretty self-motivated as a player to want to get in. So we'll get into that when we return on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by Grand Villa and the Start Like Casinos. Nathan Dempsey, former NHLer, sticks with us next. 4:25, Greger and Strudwick with the special guest Nathan Dempsey joining us in the studio, former NHLer, now the director at Donnan and Vimy Hockey. We'll get into that, and we kind of can tie that in, Nathan. We were talking in the last segment about just the mental side, and coming out of the lockout, you know, you played in Germany, and you didn't play, getting into a lot of games, so maybe being off for a whole year, but you felt like your swagger, just mentally, you weren't the same player, and the belief in yourself. So here's my question to somebody who works with young kids, and maybe is a guy who went through it. Is there any way, like, how can you really, because I know there's mental coaches, right? Like the sports psychologists and stuff. Can you really help with the mental side of the game for kids, do you think?
I think you can help with how they are reacting to situations. So I think for mental training, you need to go through a situation. You need to experience a situation. And then obviously you're going to react in a certain way. You're going to either react positively, negatively, not at all, whatever the case might be. Now, is there a way that we can help with the next time you face this situation? Is there a way that we can help you make a better decision on how you reacted? So I think there is a way that you can teach mental toughness, but for as far as becoming mentally tough, it's just the experiences that you go through and the way you're handling them that becomes the most important part.
Yeah, my wife used the term, she said, I've been hardened. And I think that anyone who's been through any career, that you've had ups and downs, you learn to adapt and pick yourself back up after bad things. And then, you know, you're obviously thrilled. The good things is you still have to deal with it. I think there's some mental strength in it. But I think that, you know, especially guys like yourself and me who have been through, you know, our careers were, you know, they were unreal looking back. But there was a lot of ups and downs, you know, both. And I think that, you know, that first time you faced real adversity, whether a coach doesn't play like you want, or you make a huge, you know, when you're maybe have a tough stretch for a month, or you get an injury, and how do you respond to that? And I think a lot of it, Denver, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's some support you get from teammates, and that support starts with you building relationships with your teammates.
You talk about mental toughness, and then we're talking about some of the, like, the coaching stuff that's been going on. There's all these coaching that people are being like, this coach was too hard on me, or he did this and that. I mean, no questioning, some of them were way offside.
Sure.
But that's how you get mental tough. That's how you get tough. That's how you get hardened, like your wife would say. Allow your kid, your daughter, your son to experience some tough times, regardless of what that is. Whether that's in school, whether that's on the playground, allow them to feel what it's like to have some downtime, and then just be there to support them and say, yeah, you know what, that really stunk, but now we need to do this, or now we need to make something positive come out of this. You know, going back to you and I, we went through a bunch of hard times, and I played in the minors, and I worked my way up and down and all around, and then I got diagnosed with Parkinson's. well, now what's my ability to be able to handle something like this? Well, I'll tell you what, the 15-year career of going up and down and being told I wasn't good enough or this and that definitely helped me help my resolve in becoming in fighting this disease and becoming a little bit more, you know, able to just kind of fight through stuff.
Mm-hmm. What year were you diagnosed with
2010.
Parkinson's? 2010. So, and you had three kids?
Two.
Two kids, and your oldest boy's 18 now?
He's 19 now.
19, okay. So so your kids have grown up with you having Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And so you've had it for almost 10 years. Can you talk about that aspect of, you know, pro athlete, great shape, you know, highly skilled, do whatever you want physically. And then you have Parkinson's, which is at times can be a very physically debilitating disease. Did you go talk to anybody about it? How did you get through that? Because I would think, you know, I think it's a tough disease for anybody, but I would think it might be a little bit harder for somebody who is just a really dominant, you know, physical athlete.
Yeah. So the movement disorder clinic in Edmonton at the K Clinic, they do a fantastic job with giving you a ton of support. So they have psychologists that are employed by them that deal specifically with the movement disorder, whether that be Parkinson's or another type of brain movement disorder. And they are very well trained in being able to help you deal with some of this stuff. Now, what goes along with some of the Parkinson's, like, is depression. And some of that becomes, you know, it's chemical, but some of that can be, like you said, Greg, so there's a guy that, you know, had, you know, physically was great, physically was doing whatever he wanted, and then that's kind of taken away. For me, it's a really important for me and for me when I talk to people with Parkinson's is that if you don't want to lose something, then just continue to do it as much as you can.
Okay.
So for me, I didn't take the diagnosis and just close the door and just not do anything. I wanted to continue to work. I wanted to continue to skate. I wanted to continue to coach. So I do that more, and I do that with more of my energy. Some of the things, it does take a lot of energy out of me, the disease, but the stuff that I really want to do, I make sure that I can continue to do that as much as I can.
Yeah, our community is lucky to have you, Demmer, and I've known you for a long time, and it's really inspiring the way you've taken this head on. So, you know, when you're at school, what is the interaction like with the kids? Because, you know, obviously they know where everything stands. And is there a conversation about them or with them about this in any smaller or simple way?
Yeah, it's not like I have a huge assembly and talk to them about it. You know,
of
like
course.
And although there is some time there, I've thought about maybe there's a benefit for them, like, because that's what you think about. And you know, you're at a school too, Jay. Mm. The first thing you think about is what's the best thing for the kids? Like, how can we make this better for the kids, or how can the kids learn something from this? And so for the groups that I'm on with, when I let them know that Parkinson's, what it is, how that's affected me, it's a really good tool for me to use as far as being able to tell them a little bit about resiliency and giving them the idea, like, you're having a hard time with your club team. Let's put some things into perspective here, or let's figure out a way to deal with this situation. Yeah. You know, it's important. And you talked about relationships, Jay. Relationships are the biggest thing. If you can have and build relationships with people, then it becomes so much easier to help them and to have them come to you or me to come to them and help them in a situation where they might not feel comfortable with somebody else. So I think it was, as far as my position as a director of an academy and as a coach, relationships are the very first thing and the most important thing as far as dealing with kids or with athletes. Mm-hmm.
Nathan Dempsey joins us in studio. So 2010, you were either 35 or 36, depending on the time of the year. So that's a very young man, pretty young to get diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And, you know, you'd finished playing a few years prior to that. I think your last year was in Burn. When you, did you sense something prior? Like, you got diagnosed in 2010, but those last few years when you were playing, did you think something was going on?
Oh, yeah. So when I was in LA is when I first figured it out. So that would have been what?
Like 2003, 2004.
So, right. Yeah. So, sorry. The LA, just after the lockout.
05, 06.
Yeah. So, okay. And it was my wife that she kind of noticed, after games, there'd be a little bit of a tremor. And at first I thought, well, it's just, you're kind of jacked up after game. It's just, you know, but, you know, that didn't really go away too much. And then it started to get a little bit worse. And then we went to Switzerland the next year, and things were progressing. So, and you know what, I don't know, you guys are probably the same as me. You start playing your own, you and your WebMD, and you're...
and well, Freddy's in pre-med.
Well, yeah, we all know. Yeah, whatever, what's
different.
That Chinook University where we went to?
Yeah.
I listen to your show. I listen to Freddy. God, where was I again? Oh, yeah. So I knew from that point that there was something going on. And so when I was in Boston, I actually went to a neurologist because I'm like, something's going on. So he first said, it's probably a benign tremor, which is a movement disorder, but it's one that's less than Parkinson's. It doesn't progress like Parkinson's. It kind of stays the same. And there's lots of people that have benign tremor that just have a little bit of a shake, and that's kind of all it really does to them.
Okay.
So I was fine with that. And then it started to progress a little bit. And then I'm like, okay, well, then you start kind of. So honestly, Jay, by the time 2010 rolled around and they actually diagnosed me, I was pretty sure that I knew what I had.
You knew what you had.
So at that point, it was almost like, oh, a little bit of a sigh of relief. So now I got it. This is what I have. What do I got to do?
Nathan Dempsey joins us, a former NHLer. So can you tell us, you get that diagnosis, what was the first thing it's not curable. Right. Yeah. Like once you have Parkinson's, you're going to have it. So it's a matter you talk about. You want to control it. You try to limit things. And from then till now, I'm guessing, you know, the medicinal options you had in 2019 or 20 are a lot different than maybe what you had in 2010. How's it evolved and what have you done over the last decade dealing with it?
Yeah. So like you said, there's been lots of fantastic development, and Michael J. Fox Foundation does an amazing job of raising awareness and raising funds to help help developing more insight into the disease. But in 2017, I had what's called DBS surgery. So you guys can probably see there's a lump here. It's almost like a pacemaker. So they put pacemaker
and right in your left, just in your left shoulder.
Yeah. And then the wires run up and they go into my brain. So I actually have wires into my brain right now. So they find out where the Parkinson's and where the dopamine levels are low in your brain. And they put these wires in there, and then they put those down to the pacemaker, and I can actually control the amount of stimulation that goes into these wires. So now it's crazy and it's amazing. So now they're doing more and more of this as far as some epilepsy, some stuff like that. They're using this for Parkinson's a lot more, and it's really helped with the tremor and stuff like that with me for sure.
So you have much fewer and less, I guess, dramatic tremors.
Very few tremors, and when I do have, usually I take less medication. Usually the medication will help with my tremor now more than it ever did before. So between that and a lot more of the research that's going into it, it's been crazy good.
Nathan Dempsey, I'm going to ask you to stick through one more segment. You got some time? Okay, perfect. Nathan Dempsey with Gregor and Struttick on the Thursday edition of the Gregor Show, presented by Grand Villa and the Starlight Casinos. 4:44 on Empton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Gregor and Struttick with you as we welcome. Staying with us through another segment. Appreciate it. Former NHLer Nathan Dempsey. If you heard last segment, of course, been talking about his Parkinson's, which he was diagnosed with back in 2010. And also, he is a director at Vimy and Donnan Hockey Academies. And you got open houses coming up, Demmer. So let's talk about those a little bit. Yeah. How's that going?
Yeah. So, you know, like we were talking about a little bit about, it's a lot about development. And the school at Vimy, primarily, Joy Stepark is actually the director of Donnan.
Okay.
So I'm only the director at Vimy.
Okay.
Vimy's the junior high school. We're all about development. We have tons of different sports. When you're in our school, you're in some sort of sports academy. So baseball, lacrosse, sport fit, dance. We got all kinds of.
You have sport fit?
Sport fit. So what sport fit is it's kind of like an accelerated or a kind of an expanded phys ed program. And it's kind of cool. They get to try all kinds of different things. They get,
I like that.
You know, fencing, and they try all kinds of CrossFit. They try all kinds of cool stuff. So there's a program really for everybody. If you want your kid to be active, if you want them to improve on whatever ability he has, as far as, sporting goes, we got a place for them at Vimy Ridge.
Yeah. And yeah, obviously for boys and girls.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in all sports, like we've got, tons of girls in our hockey program. We've got girls, boys in our dance program. We've got, you know, so it's boys and girls for sure.
Now, what if someone is like a tennis player? Is there a way for them? Because I don't know if there's a tennis program there.
So what we have, Jay, is called an elite program. So what this is, Caitlin Osmond, who performed in the Olympics,
sure,
she went to our school. So she was in our elite program. So what she did is she does her academics, and then our elite athletes go to their own trainer. So for your tennis players, they go during the blocks assigned to them, they go and see their own coach for tennis, you know, figure skating, you know, your swimmers. We have tons of swimmers that come to our school that have that ability as well.
And when are the open houses for parents who want to maybe take their kids and see what it's all about?
February 6th is the open house at Vimy. I believe February 13th, I believe, is at Donnan. So Donnan is our feeder school. It's our elementary school. Obviously, a little less intense, a little bit more just about being active. They have a hockey academy that starts at grade 3. They get a little less ice. It's all about being, you know, long-term athletic development, and they follow a lot of the active parameters set out. But our open house is February 6th at Vimy, and it's a great opportunity to come check out the school, talk to myself or to whoever you might, whatever program you might be interested in. All our directors are available. All our teachers are there. You get to tour the school and get an idea of what the programs are all about.
Now, Strady, were you an instructor there once?
Not at Vimy, no.
No.
I'm at a different school.
Yeah, you didn't make the cut.
Oh, yeah, you didn't.
I got pushed out.
Got pushed out.
No, he kept not returning my calls when I left.
I'll get back at you and knocking my teeth out. Here you go.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing they're missing. I can teach off the glass.
I like it. We always like special guests in for five questions, Demmer, so you can stick around. You listen to the show, you know what five questions is.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. Let's get to five questions brought to you by The Brick. Saving more on furniture, mattresses, appliances, and big screen TVs. It's The Brick.
It's time for five questions on The Jason Greger Show.
All right, guys. Good to have a special guest in here doing this with us for five questions. Last night, Matthew Perreault pretty upset after taking a bit of an elbow from Jake Virtanen of the Vancouver Canucks. And finding out today, Virtanen won't hear from the NHL and their player safety department. Should he have at least had a phone hearing?
Whoa, Perreault was hot. There's no doubt about it. No, I don't think so. I don't think it was really even an elbow. I think it was like a forearm to the chest. So, no, I don't think a phone hearing was needed.
I totally agree. I think that whole situation was blown out of proportion. I think Virtanen did nothing wrong.
Well, definitely won't have a phone hearing. I'd be surprised. Perreault's allowed to get upset. It's his prerogative. But at first I was like, geez, this must be really dirty. Then I went and watched it, and I was like,
totally.
Perreault's dropping F-bombs. I'm going to swing my stick at guys' heads. I was like, dude, like, now I think maybe he's a little sensitive because he's coming off a concussion. And that's understandable, but I'm not even sure if that's a penalty. It might have been a borderline 2-minute penalty.
Totally. And I think, I mean, I listened to you guys when I was driving here, and if I'm coming back from a concussion, I am making darn sure that I'm taking care of myself.
That's what Strud said.
And Strud was saying when I was driving and I was listening to him, and I totally agree. If I'm coming back, if it's my first game back from a conky, my stick is parallel to whatever's coming near my way.
Yeah, I don't think, even in today's game, Demmer, and I don't think it's that outrageous to ask a player, not to the NHLs, but just for your own self-protection. Do it yourself.
Just take care of yourself.
Yeah, I think it's something that we're players are overlooking now, and they're too trusting of other teams, other players. You should never trust anybody.
Never.
Question two, sticking with that theme. Overall, how would you grade the job that George Perreault has done as head of NHL player safety in the last 2.5 years on the job?
I think he has a really tough job. Right. Because on every play, you're going to have one side who's like, oh, yeah, throw the book at him. And then it's hard to each one. If I think a guy is two games and he gets three or he gets one, I'm like, I don't really see the point in critiquing it, because it's like plus one. We're going to have different opinions. Like, I don't really know what the exact stipulation is. And I haven't seen many that I would have probably preferred there was no suspension here, but that's only because I'm like, had a guy eventually just said enough's enough. But I've also said the second Tkachuk hit where Cassian snapped, that wasn't really the dirty one. It was the first one. And I was surprised that if there's a call on the ice and maybe they score a power play goal, well, then he's probably not going to deliver the second hit. So, and I don't even think that's Perreault's fault. So I think Perreault has done it. He's got a tough job. So I'm going to say he's done a pretty decent job.
I agree, Greggs. I think it's one of those jobs that you're not going to please everybody ever. So all you're looking for from George is just the consistency, as much consistency as you can get. So if it's a certain, if a hit or if a foul happens in a certain realm, then here's the realm, and it's a little bit vague from there as far as how many games or if there's going to be hearing. You just want to have a little consistency, and I think he's been pretty consistent. Like, I can't complain one way or another.
Yeah, I think that 50% of the time he's going to be hated, and it's a hard job, man. Like, it's a really hard job. I know I would not want that job. The rules are so detailed, and you're trying to figure out, you know, what is illegal, what isn't. So, you know, I'll give him a passing grade because I think he's got an impossible job where every single decision he's make is second-guessed. I don't think there's one where you're like, yep, you got that right.
Ian Mendez wrote a piece today about Mark Stone's legacy with the Ottawa Senators. You can catch that at tsn.ca. Outside of Daniel Alfredson, who's the greatest senator of all time?
Ron Tugnutt.
It's a tough one. Like, there's been some really good ones. So I'm not going to take all the different ones, but I'll go off a little bit off the board here, and I'll say Chris Phillips. He was there a long time, steady defenseman. You know, through the good times and the bad, he was there. I always appreciate the way he played. He just got the job done. I wouldn't say he was extremely offensive or mean. He was just a minute eater. So I always liked him. So I'm a little bit biased taking a D-man, but I got Chris Phillips. Demmer, who do you got?
Like, I know he kind of went out in the wrong way, but Erik Karlsson was just so much better at his position than anybody and than anybody else for such a long period of time. As far as offensive defenseman goes, at a certain time, he was just the cream of the crop. And so I think Erik Karlsson.
Because if here's it, like, Mark Stone's a good player. But Mark Stone's not even a great player. I think the word great gets used way too often. I don't think Mark Stone was a great player. The guy never scored 30 goals. Never scored. He's never a point of game player. Like, they won a playoff round once in his time in Ottawa. What's his legacy? Like, I think we're way too quick to want to hand out legacies for so-and-so. Mark Stone was a good player in Ottawa. Next point, I don't think, like, he goes down as like, oh my goodness, we're going to have to retire this guy's number. Like, he was just a good player. Jason Spezza did way more as Ottawa Senators. There's probably a lot. Danny Heatley, if we're looking at it, like, Danny Heatley, and, you know, guy had overcome pretty terrible situation that, you know, he was part of, but as a back-to-back 50 goal scorer. And, you know, you can say, regardless of how he left, Mark Stone might not even be top 10 all-time Ottawa player. So I think it's, I get that he's coming back and they're always looking for storylines, but I'm not, his legacy to me would be, I mean, he's a good player. That's about it.
Yeah.
Big matchup this weekend in the NFC Championship as the 49ers take on the Packers. Which team is the better quarterback history?
So all-time Packers or 49ers? Ooh,
yeah,
man, that's, you got Bart Starr, and then you got Aaron Rodgers. Man, Joe Montana and Steve Young, it's Brett Favre.
I'm going 49ers.
Yeah, me
too. I love Steve Young and Joe Montana. I always liked those two guys. Different title players, but great. And they were unbelievable.
Well, they had a lefty and a righty, so they had both arms covered. So I'll go with the Packers.
That's NFL, right?
Yeah.
I'm totally not a football guy.
No.
So I'll pass.
You'll pass?
And final question of the top-ranked Canadian men at the Australian Open. Who goes the furthest of the Canadians?
Now, Shapovalov's ranked 13th. Ogier Lissiam is 20th. Ronich is 32nd, and Pospisil is 73rd. Good for the Canadian boys. I love it. Let's just start with that. I haven't even looked at the draw, so that's, I probably should have, so my mistake. But,
well, Shapovalov's in the same draw as Federer. He could meet him in the fourth round.
Yeah, so, well, the other guy's then got to be in this. Yeah, but are the other guy's going to get the fourth round? I'll probably go with Chapo.
Yeah, I like his fight. I'll go against Milos Raonic. He's been out a long time. He always seems to be injured, and it's hard to play, you know, to be sharp if you're out. I think his recent thing's a back injury, I believe. So I got Shapovalov too. And I mean, if he makes it to the fourth round and lose to Roger, you're like, okay, well, you know, whatever. So that's my, I like, he's a scrappy tennis player.
Oh, and I loved watching that Davis Cup. Like, that was just unbelievable tennis. And the fact that Chapo really, I felt, held that team together during that whole tournament, I think he's going to ride that high and continue it on.
Who do you got, Connor? Just to go back to number four, which group of quarterbacks do you like better, the 49ers or the Packers?
It's a good one. I think I might give the Packers the slight edge. Bart Starr, another good one that they had, so I think the Packers, they've had those guys that stick around for a long time. Not to say that the 49ers haven't, but really since Steve Young, who they had. Colin Kaepernick had a few years. I guess Jeff Garcia was pretty good, but I'll give the slight edge to the Packers. And for question five, I'm going to go Milos. I think he's going to surprise some people this year.
Milos. I will make a prediction. Milos will pull out of a match with an injury. That's
it seems like
thing.
It happens all the time.
He's, the big man can't stay healthy. You can't win when you're hurt. So I hope you're right, man, because he's a formidable. He's got a sick serve.
Unbelievable.
But when you're hurt, man, you can't play.
He's too big for that game. That dude is huge. Doesn't he look like a big man on that court?
I don't know if he's in really good shape. That's my honest opinion. I've said that before.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if he's in elite shape.
I just think some bodies, some DNAs are just more susceptible to injuries.
I think the fact that he lumbers around out there.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I would like to, I don't know what the metrics are for a tennis player for conditioning, but I'd be interested to see what his are. I look at Roger Federer. He never seems to tire. And at times, Milos gets a little... Now, he is a lot bigger man,
Federer is maybe the most efficient tennis player of all time.
Right. He's a freak.
Right, he is. But, I mean, if you're trying to be the best, you got to compare yourself to the greatest.
I think Milos Raonic, honestly, because you can... When you've got the Joker, and you've got Nadal, and you've got Federer, you got three of probably the top five guys of all time. Then you throw in Andy Murray, who is a pretty good player in his own right.
Sure.
I think Milos is at a time where he just... you look at guys at hockey where you would say, man, he was a really good player, but kind of got overlooked because he just wasn't as good as Lemieux or Gretzky, right? Like Marcel Dion, although Dion, he won the Art Ross, that guy was a 100-point guy all the time. Actually, he scored the most points for 15 years, so he's probably a bad example.
Dale Hawerchuk.
Yeah, that'd be a great example. Like, so unbelievable player, but...
Just, so underrated.
Like the Jets as a team. The Jets had really good teams.
They did,
And then they couldn't beat Edmonton and Calgary because they just had better teams.
Yeah.
I like Dale Hawerchuk. It's a good example.
Tough time to be a singles tennis player right now in that men's game.
Oh, like you're just waiting. Yeah. Like young guys are just like, hey, can any of these old... And like you never used to play at this age before. Because guys just, they didn't have the nutrition. They weren't given all of the training. They didn't have the money, so they didn't have all the training, knowledge and everything. But now these guys have probably lasted 5 years longer than any of the previous guys would have. Now, is that because they're better athletes? No, I just think they're open to better things, right? Like, that's why I'm always a little skeptical when people want to rip on the 80s hockey players. I'm like, are you telling me if the 80s players wouldn't have been given the same skating and everything else? Like, they're just as good. It's just they're faster now because they're given more opportunities
to
push their body.
Apples, right?
Yeah. Like, and just think about the equipment, like the skates and the sticks and every, you'd have to, like, the skates especially, man. Like, I finally got a new pair of skates the first time in 20 years.
Yeah.
And literally, I all of a sudden felt like I was Connor McDavid in Men's League Division 6. Like, my skates are probably 3 pounds lighter. I blew by Strutty like he was a pylon. Yeah. It was unbelievable. And trust me, it's not like I suddenly got stronger, but this the skates, how they felt. I could not believe the difference.
Were you in rubber boots?
Yeah, I know. I just, let's listen. This guy's building himself up. I've seen him skate so many times.
Oh, it was undemmered. Seriously, I wish you would have had video of it. You know, Strutty, just all of a sudden there's like a battleship turning. And all of a sudden.
I literally had to just black that out. I just can't watch the way you skate because I actually became a worse skater watching you skate. And the worst thing is they let you on the ice to coach kids.
By the way, the 6-year-olds, killing him. Crushing it against them. We had a coach kids game.
Oh, did you?
Take them down a notch.
Went right through all of them.
Dangled. Dangled kids.
We got to build our confidence somewhere.
You know what? I'm like, nobody said that. Why are we playing? Is this a game? Let's go.
Unbelievable.
It was awesome.
We had to build the resiliency we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that's your men's league. You went home and told your wife you scored 2 goals and 1 assist against 6-year-olds.
It was a great shift, Strutty. And then after that, just stayed on the bench. Can't top it.
Smart.
It's like the last time I played men's league. I fluked out and somehow scored 5 goals. And I'm just like Seinfeld. Why would I go back? I'm never going to get better than that. There's no chance I'll score 5 again. So you leave them thinking.
Just mic drop it out, eh?
It came out with scored 5 goals. That guy's pretty good. What happened to him? Yeah, sorry, guys. I needed more of a challenge. Yeah.
4 in warm-up.
No. It's 5 in the last game. It was unbelievable.
The wife was so proud.
She was in bed. It was late. 11 o'clock. She can't stay up past 9. Nathan, we really appreciate you coming in. Always great to talk to you. And keep doing what you're doing with all the kids at Vimy. Once again, February 6th, if you want to get in. Now, you have shadow days too, correct? Is that later on?
So, no, they can sign up right now. Go to our website, vimyedmonton.ca. Hit the shadow day tab. You fill out the information. It comes right to my email. And then we hook up a day that works best for us and them. And they get to experience a day at our school, and then that's the best way to kind of figure out if it's a place that they want to go.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. Well, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
You betcha. Thanks for having me.
It's Nathan Dempsey, of course, a director at Vimy Hockey. They're connected with Donnan Hockey. Also was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2010 and was doing awesome battle act. Pretty motivating, I would think, for the kids and everybody else, and also had a pretty good career with one of the highlights and lowlights at the same time, knocking Strutty's teeth out back in Calgary at the OK Corral after rookie party. Who was to blame? We're still not sure. It's a debate. Was it Strud's in the wrong spot? Or was it Nathan Dempsey listening to his coach who told him earlier to shoot the puck harder? So I guess, got to listen to your coach sometime. So maybe you should blame Brian Sutter, Strud's. You've never brought that part of the story up. Maybe it was Sutter's fault.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't running on 100% that morning, so it could have been anyway. He might have been the one that shot it.
Let's get to Connor Halley's Sports Center update, brought to you by McDonald's. The Bacon Big Mac is here until January 27th. Try it. You'll love it. McDonald's.